Hello, folks, and welcome to another edition of My Car Guru. I had a very good car weekend. You know, if you were to ask your wife, you say, honey, you want to have a great car weekend this weekend? She'd probably say, no. But in my case, my wife was all in because it did involve some one-on-one time together. And I'll tell you about it here in just a second. I did have a disastrous thing happen. Bought a pretty expensive car a couple weeks ago, a 2023 Corvette. And we were moving things around a lot for the weekend to get our showroom ready and, you know, get the front of the lot looking good. And we pulled the Corvette outside. Well, the window was down. And we forgot to put the window back up. And it rained cats and dogs Saturday night, or Friday night, Saturday morning, I guess. And I get a phone call from my sales manager, who was the first to arrive, and he drives up the driveway and sees the Corvette sitting there with the window down, and he goes, oh no. But I'm not going to accept total blame for it. I was notified while I was eating dinner with my brother and several other friends at the Smoky Mountain chapter of the Porsche Club of America had a big spring fling this weekend. It's much tamer than it sounds like. But it was quite fun, and we were at the dinner table. It was probably, I don't know, we sat down about 7:30. It was probably about 8:30, and my phone rings. I look at it. My wife always glares at me if I even hint I'm going to answer a phone call while we're sitting down to eat. But I had to because it was my nephew. I figured something was wrong since he's my general sales manager at Gateway Ford. And he said, hey, Lenny, I need you to do me a favor. I said, what's that? He said, I need you to go down to the dealership, and the keys to the Corvette are on Shane's desk and the window's down. I said, the window's down? He said, yeah, we pulled it out and the window was down, and I forgot to put it up. I said, okay. I said, I'll take care of it. It wasn't 3 minutes after he called me that I completely forgot about it. So I go on home and climb in bed and have a good evening. Next morning I get up. I'm getting ready for the car show that morning. It was a bunch of people, and like I say, in the car, the Porsche Club of America. And so we were having a special show and a judging contest and several other fun things for the day. And so that's where my mind was, and I get a phone call that morning from my sales manager. Said, Lenny, you need to come to the dealership. I got bad news. What's that? Said, somebody left the window down in the Porsche. Ding, ding, ding. All the alarms went off, so I guess it was my fault. I should have gone down and done it, but I didn't leave it down to begin with, but I was the one who had to take care of it. All of a sudden, my enthusiasm for the Porsche Club event evaporated, and the dealership is just right over the hill. So I jumped in my Porsche, drove over the hill, got down there, and it was just sitting there with a puddle of water and standing in the seat. And I was looking at my cleanup guy, and I said, why haven't you gotten the water out of this yet? And he said, well, I had to wash this one first. I said, no, this is DEFCON 4 here. Let's get all this water out of this car. So he stopped what he was doing, and we worked together. We unbolted the seat. We were able to get underneath the carpet, and there wasn't much water underneath, so it wasn't as bad as I thought it was, but it was still bad. My feelings were hurt, and I'm just now getting over it. But it's okay. Everything works. There was some little intrusion of water, and I'm not really worried about it because everything works and it's dry. You know, if this happens to you, you have to get underneath the carpet, especially if it gets really wet. Like I said last week, if you have this situation, it's something that you cannot afford to leave the carpet in the vehicle. You have to get to where the wiring harnesses are, just in case you've got a wiring harness in standing water. That would not be good. That was not the situation with me. We were able to look up underneath the carpet, and everything was fine. It was just damp. So we dried it out real good. I think we left a fan on it for like 24 hours and then left it out in the sun with the windows down for the rest of the time. So it's all good. But that car event was awesome. They had this thing called the Gimmick Rally. And so what they do with the Gimmick Rally is, of course, the rally should tell you that it has something to do with driving your car. And it does. About a 100-mile ride through the beautiful mountains of the rolling hills of Tennessee and the mountains of western North Carolina. That's pretty much about as good as it gets. But we were supposed to identify certain things. We follow a very specific directions. It tells you exactly the mileage that where you have to turn each and every single turn that you have to take. There were about 20 trivia questions you had to answer, which would be revealed as you drove on this route. And then there were about 50 photographs of churches and schools and barns with quilts painted on them and different types of stores, rundown stores, a standing chimney that used to have a house connected to it. These 50 pictures were all randomly dispersed on the pages. It's not like you were going to see them in order, so we had to be really attentive. And guess who my co-pilot was, or my navigator, I should say? It was my wife, and we had an absolute ball. If you're familiar with this area, if you've never driven either from Greenville up Highway 70 through a place called Shelton Laurel, which goes all the way, I think it's Highway 212, if I'm not mistaken, goes all the way over to Irwin, Tennessee, you need to take that drive. To me, it's as pretty as the Blue Ridge Parkway. Absolutely gorgeous, amazing, an amazing place to drive a car that really handles well. But it was an absolute ball. And my wife and I even got trophies. Third place. I was really surprised we got beat because I think we only had to guess at two of the questions. So I think every other one that we got was right. I have to see the score sheet to be sure. Make sure there wasn't any home cooking, if you know what I mean. Okay, I'm going to take my first break. I'll be back in just a minute. Okay, I am back. You know, this time of year, a lot of people are thinking about buying a boat, buying a camper, pulling a utility trailer of some kind. I mean, I've got a car hauler trailer, which has tandem axles. I've got a camper. I've got a 12-foot utility trailer. I've got a dump trailer that I use for pretty heavy-duty stuff, mulch and things like that. What else? Oh, yeah, I have an aluminum car hauler. Now, I can tow just about all of that with my Ford F-150. But I'm kind of stretching it a little bit if I'm actually hauling a car inside my car hauler. It'll do it, but it's not recommended. So let me give you an idea of some of the things you need to think about when it comes to towing. First, obvious is the towing capacity of the vehicle. You'll find this information in the owner's manual. You know, you got to make sure that you're not looking at just the payload capacity. You're looking for the actual towing capacity. You also need to know if it already has a hitch on it. You know, that look, sometimes they have a frame hitch or an equalizer hitch. It just looks like a square that's sticking out underneath the bumper. If it's equipped with that, then it's called an equalizer hitch or a frame hitch. And those will tow the heavier loads. If it's just got a little bumper hitch or something like that, like my Bronco does, then really the towing capacity of that is not that much. Another thing you need to think about is the trailer ball size. So there are three basic trailer ball sizes. Now I'm talking about the ball that the actual hitch sets down on, the tongue of the trailer sets down on top of this ball. There's the first one, the smallest one is 1 7/8". Then there's a 2-inch, and I use a 2-inch on most of my utility trailers, but for my big camper, it's a 2 5/8". And it's a pretty big problem if you don't use the right ball for your trailer, because it can actually come off while you're going down the road, which is a very bad thing. The trailer ball size is going to be stamped on the tongue of the trailer. So make sure if you buy a new trailer, get instructions from the people who are selling to you. I mean, they should be able to coach you. And if somebody would sell you a trailer knowing that the vehicle that you're going to tow it with doesn't have the capacity to handle it, then that would be negligent on their part, to say the least. Most heavy trailers, like my camper, for example, has built-in trailer brakes. And you have to have a trailer brake controller on your vehicle in order for those to operate. So we order that on all of our F-150s and 250s, just about all of our full-size trucks. We don't on the Maverick and the Ranger. There's an aftermarket trailer brake controller that you can buy, but trailer brakes are so important because they help you get the load stopped. You know, you can just about anything will pull a load. I mean, I remember the commercials that they used to show a Chevy pickup truck pulling Boeing 747. Just about anything can get something started like that. It's stopping is the problem. So trailer brakes are important. If you buy anything bigger than a small utility trailer, hopefully it will have trailer brakes. I would ask for that. Does your vehicle have a transmission cooler? You know, when you're pulling heavy loads, especially through the mountains, your transmission fluid can get really hot, and you need to be able to cool that down, or you could ruin your transmission. So if you're buying a camper or going to be pulling a pretty heavy boat, consider having a transmission cooler added to your vehicle. My F-150 and a lot of trucks have a tow mode. Sometimes it's called a tow haul mode. It's a button that you can push in, and it changes the shift points on the transmission. It'll actually stay in the lower gears longer to help you get the load going. So that's a good thing to have on a vehicle. You know, if you're pulling, let's say you bought a pop-up camper or a small boat or a small utility trailer, something that weighs less than 2,500 pounds, you can pull that with just about anything. I mean, if you're driving a Honda CRV, you'd still need to find out what the towing capacity is. Some vehicles, it's not recommended that you tow under any circumstances with them. But most small SUVs and crossovers are going to have, you know, up to a 3,500-pound towing capacity. Now, if you're towing something like a travel trailer or a large boat, something that weighs more than 2,500 pounds, up to 10,000 pounds, you can do that with a Ford F-150 or a Chevy 1500. In some cases, you can do it with an Expedition or a Chevy Tahoe or Suburban, something like that. And they'll be able to handle that weight. When you get close to 10,000 pounds, that's a lot for just an SUV. That's going to max out probably a Suburban or a Ford Expedition. As a matter of fact, I think the Expedition is limited to about 8,500 pounds. But still, you don't buy a camper or anything that you're going to tow until you find out what the towing capacity is. And if you get up at the upper limit of the towing capacity, you're not going to be happy when you're pulling over the mountains and stuff like that, because they just don't have the power. That's why so many people use diesel engines to tow things. I know diesel fuel is extremely expensive, but when it comes to towing, there's nothing better than a diesel engine. They have so much more torque than gasoline engines do. So that's why farmers and, you know, anybody in a business, any kind of towing that they're doing on a commercial basis, they're always going to have diesel engines. Now, when you get up over 10,000 pounds, up to 15,000 pounds, you're going to need something like a Ford F-250 or a Chevy 2500 or a Ram 2500. That is getting up to the point where your brake size has to be bigger. The transmission has to be bigger. They have to have built-in transmission coolers. And the capacity of those are much greater. They have more leaves in the rear springs than a 1500. And it just allows them to support that extra weight. And then anything over 15,000 pounds, you're going to have a dually. I know that some people pull greater than that with an F-250. It's not about whether you can. It's about whether you should. And in most cases, you shouldn't. A dually just gives the vehicle greater stability when you're going down the road. I don't know if you've ever pulled a camper before, but if you have a pretty long camper behind your vehicle and you're going down the interstate and a big tractor trailer rig blows past you, it'll test your mettle a little bit. You have to learn how to anticipate that. And what you do is, as the truck is passing you, you will be pushed out just a little bit, and then it sucks you back in. And then when you get back to the end of the trailer, it pushes you back out again. So you have to be prepared for those adjustments that you have to make to the steering wheel. I remember the first time I pulled a vehicle, we were going to Northern Virginia. We were going to Washington, D.C., and we were going to go to Williamsburg and all that. We decided to camp, and it was my first experience pulling a travel trailer. And I had never been through that before. I'd never seen or felt what a big truck would do when you're going down the road and they cruise up beside you. You know, they're pushing so much air that it creates, it just does funny things with the way the air is blowing. And so the first time, I mean, it shocked me. I thought I was losing control of the vehicle, but I didn't. And I regained my composure and was able to keep the vehicle under control. But sometimes those are hard lessons to learn, because they end up in with tragic circumstances. So it's best to be prepared for that and to practice, really, before you go. I remember I loaded, first time I went camping was with a little pop-up that we bought. And that was my first experience towing something. And so it's a learning curve, you know, how to swing out when you go around a turn. You know, you can watch all kinds of videos on YouTube of people that really don't know what they're doing, and they're trying to tow a vehicle and they cut the curve too short, or they don't know how to turn around in a parking lot, and they end up taking out a big sign or a light pole. You know, these are things that you just have to practice on. So if you are thinking about going out and buying something like a camper or a boat or something that you're going to be towing, just make sure that your vehicle can handle it. Make sure you know what your towing capacity is. If you're driving an older vehicle, all you have to do is look it up online, Google it, and you'll find it. You can just type in, if you're driving a 1989 Chevy Silverado 1500, then you can Google that and put and just ask what the towing capacity is, and it'll pop right up there for you. So do that before you go out and buy something. People buy too much camper sometimes. I've seen people pulling fifth wheels with half-ton pickup trucks. Now, a lot of the campers are much lighter now. There's no doubt. I mean, my camper is 34 feet long with a 3 or 4 feet tongue on the end of it. So total of about 37, 38 feet. I pull that with my half-ton pickup truck because the camper only weighs 7,500 pounds. 20 years ago, that camper would have weighed over 10,000 pounds. So they've been able to lightweight things, read into that much cheaper. And so I think what they do is they build them a lot out of aluminum and less wood than they used to. So they save a lot of weight that way. Okay, I'm going to take my last break. I'll be back here in just a second. Okay, a quick announcement I want to make. We are having a Cars and Coffee event on April the 8th, looking at my calendar. You know, there's a big one up at Bristol that happens periodically. I don't know what kind of schedule they're on, maybe every other month or something like that. But this is one in Greenville, Tennessee, at Gateway Ford, and we're going to have we normally have anywhere from 75 to 100 vehicles. Last year was down a little bit because of the weather, but this year we're hoping for good weather. So April the 8th, come down around 8 o'clock, get here early, and I'll have some refreshments for you, including very hot coffee. And I'm going to have most of my vehicles. I'm pretty sure that my car hauler will be done. I know my 65 Mustang convertible will be done and on display, and I'll have a bunch of other things down here for you to see. 55 Thunderbird and 66 Mustang K-Code with Fastback, which is definitely worth seeing. But there'll be a lot of other neater stuff there than that. I'm not the only one that has some cool cars. But, you know, the Cars and Coffee is really not a car show per se. It's just a bunch of people who love old cars and get together and talk about what kind of experiences they've had and things that they went through to acquire their vehicle and get it ready. And, you know, it's so much of this is about people's life stories, what they grew up with, what they were interested in when they were young, and they never were able to acquire something like that. And then when they got older, they finally said, you know, I'm retired now, and I think I'm going to buy the car that was the car of my dreams when I was 16, and they start looking for it, and they find it, and then they drive it and enjoy it and take it on those beautiful rides through these rolling hills of East Tennessee and the beautiful mountains in Western North Carolina. And it becomes a part of their life, and it helps them reconnect with their youth. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, right? We got to keep rolling, keep doing what we can to stay young, and that's one way that a lot of people do it. My only recommendation would be that you buy something that's already restored and make sure that it's ready to go before you hit the road with it. You know, too many people buy cars on eBay or maybe even bring a trailer and they get it home and they just start driving it without really having it thoroughly checked. I just bought a 1930 Model A Ford and I took it home and everything was fine except my wife and us, we parked it in the downstairs basement or downstairs garage. And we started smelling gas, and I went downstairs, and it had a fuel leak. So I had to pull it out. Yeah, I jumped the gun a little bit. I should have let Johnny check it out. Well, it's over at G2 right now getting checked out. And what I'll do is I'll just make a list of the things that I see. I'll drive the car, take it on its maiden journey. I'll make sure that it has oil in it and coolant and so forth and won't stray too far from the dealership. And then I'll just see what it needs. You know, if it has a funny rattle or making some kind of noise or the brakes aren't working very good, then I'll just make a list. I'll turn it over to my mechanic and he'll fix all that. Then we'll take it out again, make sure it's ready to go. But the thing about it is they're old cars and things are going to happen. You just have to be prepared for that. Now, you probably don't have a mechanic like I do. If you need help with an old car, if you got something that's not running good or something that you've had for a long time and you want to get it checked out, I can do that for you at my restoration shop. It's not something that we do a lot of for other people because I keep them busy with my stuff. But if you have something you want to get checked out just to make sure that it's safe to drive and, you know, make sure all the fluids are good and put it up on a lift and check the brakes and stuff, we can do that for you. Just give me a call, 423-552-2020. You know, and even if you're wanting to sell something, you've got an old car that has been sitting around or stored in a garage and you're just kind of tired of looking at it and you got no real reason to keep it. Your kids don't want it. Their kids don't want it. And you just soon get the money out of it. So I guarantee they'd probably rather have cash than have the old car. But if you want to sell something like that, just give me a call, 423-552-2020. Well, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.